You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
And welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my good friend Anelia Benz returns for her first show in 2013. In January 2010, she received a request from Source to go public. This began the establishment of a free information source at www.ascension101.com. Thousands have been deeply moved and triggered by the paradigm-shifting video first released. Through several meet-and-greets held in California, she has shared her inspiration, vision, and vibration. Since, she has continued to work behind the scenes with lightworkers and public figures to raise the vibration of the planet. This is taking many forms, from newsletters, podcasts, tools, events, and courses. She is presently serving on the Awaken Council, developing the new paradigm in partnership with others. Today, we will be focusing on her latest e-course, Love, Sex, and Soulmates in the New Paradigm. So let's welcome Anelia back to the show now. Hi, Anelia. How are you?
Hi, Lance. I'm really well. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm always have fun being on a show with you or seeing you privately.
Yeah, we do have a good time.
Yeah. So your new e-course is really wonderful. It's very in-depth, and it really gets into the nuts and bolts and the core of our belief systems. And what I get is that we contain a lot of unconscious and programmed belief systems around those areas, don't we?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I think that I would say the majority of individuals on the planet would have the state of reality within their own lives, and it just goes beyond just love relationships or sexual relationships. It actually goes beyond that to every type of relationship. And most of those will be completely based on the programs that they picked up as children growing up in society, they pick up from television, from their friends, relatives, and family. And belief systems, cultural systems, religious beliefs, and their own egoic structures. And mm-hmm. those dictate really what type of relationship they're going to have. And, you know, I think that for the majority of people, the significant other relationship is probably going to be one of the most important ones in their life. You know, whenever they have one of those, it's going to be very, very, they spend a lot of time with it, a lot of investment, a lot of energy. So in order to get a really great one, it's really good to look at all those programs. Yeah.
Yes. I've seen where a lot of people have desires and that are suppressed that don't coincide with their programming, and they have often follow the program beliefs and end up in relationships that they don't want. For instance, for me, I didn't realize that I was homosexual, and so I got married thinking that it was nothing to it, and realized afterwards that, wait a minute, there's a lot more to it, and you can't just turn it off like a switch. So many people operate from suppressed emotions and out of fear continue to operate out of that and create a lot of pain and suffering for themselves and others.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, if you think about it, all the individuals who are either homosexual or asexual and feel or have and even deeply believe that they have to, you know, like get married, start a family and all that stuff with the wrong sex, really,
Right.
You know, and it's because it's that societal pressure, and also it seems insane that even nowadays in many countries and states, anything that's not heterosexual is illegal, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's just totally crazy. How can that be? But also, one of the things that really surprised me, I receive a lot of emails and communications and Facebook messages and things like that. And you would be surprised at the amount of messages I've received with people coming to me saying, my guru, my teacher, my guide, my this and that spiritual leader or religious leader has told me that because I'm homosexual or bisexual, lesbian, I'm not going to reach enlightenment. And I'm very upset about it, and I've tried so hard to not be whatever anymore so I can reach enlightenment. And it was like, good grief, you know, it's still happening. It's still happening, and it has absolutely no bearing with enlightenment whatsoever. It's like completely irrelevant.
Yes, I totally agree with you, and that's one of the areas that I see occurring in all the major religions, and many of the Hindu and other religions as well, and of course Islam, that's notorious for the suppression of women and homosexuals. So, you know, if we are all born equal, and we are, and we're all consciousness, and here having an experience, then of course those things are incidental and have no bearing on enlightenment whatsoever.
Right. And they do, however, have a huge bearing on what we do in life, yeah, because of the programs. So the way we communicate with others, the types of jobs we want, the types of relationships we want, sometimes it's programmed through a belief system saying, well, if you're this way inclined, then you have to be this, this, and this way, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to like this, and you have to like that, and you can't like this other. Mm-hmm. For example, for women, you know, many people think that women don't have a libido, and that when, you know, that men are always, when they get married after a few months or maybe a couple of years, men are complaining because they don't want to have sex, you know, the women doesn't want to have sex. That's a bollocks, you know, that doesn't happen. If you knew the amount of women, right, that I know that have the complete opposite problem, yeah, and that they're married and their men have no interest in having sexual relationships anymore. They've had their kids, you know, they're happy, they're watching TV, drinking beer, going to watching football or whatever, and they have no interest in having an intimate sexual relationship with their wives. And then the women do all sorts of things, you know, they lose weight, they buy sexy underwear, you know, they try to go to sexual counseling and all sorts of things, and for nothing, it's like a cultural thing, you know, it's like...
Right.
It's so weird.
Yeah, well, we have short attention spans and we get bored very easily.
Exactly, and you know what? Society teaches that's wrong.
Yeah. Right.
That once you get hooked up with somebody, you've got to stay with that person forever.
Oh, forever.
And beyond forever.
You know,
yeah, and then, of course, that works for some people, yeah, because some people are that way inclined.
That's right.
They like the intimacy that comes from a really years and decades of having a relationship with others.
Oh, yeah, that's a beautiful
thing.
Create
a very, very powerful, intimate relationship if they're highly compatible.
Mm-hmm.
If they have the same libido, if they have the same likes and dislikes, then that can be amazing.
Oh,
amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. No
but
question
the majority,
about it.
Yeah, the rest of us are stuck, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, you know. I can't look that way, you know. You can't look at eye candy or anything.
And then doesn't a lot of this have to do with the level of consciousness and our... Basically, that most people, and I don't mean to offend most people out there, but most of us are in some form of sleeping state. In other words, we're not fully conscious, and so we are subject to the belief systems that we're being programmed with, and there's a very heavy programming going on by the elite and by those who control the world, and they have their own agenda. And people are starting to wake up and realize that their belief systems are not theirs. They don't, you know, they're just like a puff of smoke in the wind, and yet we're taught at every level on television and movies and everything. It's just being shoved down our throats what to think, feel, say, and do. And it's all designed to create an automaton that is well-trained and will fall into line.
Yeah, follow instruction.
Right.
Yeah, and that tension that's created, because also in the old paradigm, most of the religions and even the enlightened schools would teach very much to suppress all the chakras below your heart, and really, literally suppress them and put all your attention on the higher chakras. And and also, if you can interpret the same thing with other religions that would completely pray their desires away, sexual desires away and stuff like that. And at the same time, our Western society bombards us with sexual stimulation through visual, through language, music, and all sorts of things. So there's this huge tension, yeah? One message is to suppress. And the other message is to desire, have it, yeah? And it creates a huge, it creates obsession, basically. So it's extremely distracting. And that's why when you were saying, like, the suppression earlier, you know, you were saying the suppression of things that are seen as wrong or desires that the person believes are sins, it's highly damaging for the person, because the more they suppress something, the stronger it becomes, and the more it's going to affect their lives. So that's one of the control factors.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. What are some of the myths that we hold about the necessity of finding some other person to become completely lost in? And where does that originate?
One person on the planet that's your mate and your soulmate.
Right.
And that's actually quite erroneous, too, because everybody on the planet is your soulmate, yeah? We are all connected. We are all one, really.
Yes.
And the illusion of separation is what we're doing and we're living through and we're having fun with on this experience, on this physical experience of life. And often a person will grow in their lives and will change timelines, will change directions, will change vibration. And the individuals who are in one vibration or one time or period of their lives were absolutely so, their vibration was so similar that they felt like they could join as one, really. Mm. And they said, this is my soulmate. But then a few years later, if they didn't continue developing in the same exact same way, they're going to grow apart and then they'll realize, oh, hold on a minute, maybe that wasn't my soulmate. Yeah, or maybe, and the saddest part is sometimes one of them will say, oh, actually, you know, you weren't my soulmate, and the other person is still quite obsessed about that person being their soulmate. Yeah?
Right.
So it's an illusion, yeah, and it also is quite recent. You can trace it to the Industrial Revolution and the whole concept of romantic love and all that. That's when it started. And it became very broad. Before that, we used to be taught that any type of romantic obsession like that would be deadly. You know, if you've ever read Greek mythology or even Shakespeare, you will find that society was being taught the opposite. You know, don't go down that road; you're going to die terribly. But that was just, it's just a form of seeing. You find that in other cultures, more native cultures, partner or the significant other relationship is one of the least important relationships in society. And they have other relationships that are more important, which is I don't know. I mean, there's so many different models, but there are other relationships that are more important than the man-woman or man-man or woman-woman one-on-one type relationship. Yeah, it's quite different.
What about the concept that the real meaning of the marriage of the man and the woman has to do with the uniting of the male and the female within? Since we know that we've most likely incarnated as men and women and probably other things in over the millions and trillions of years that have existed, isn't it a game of solitary unity that we are actually uniting ourselves, that there's no one to look for out there, and that it's a matter of going within and balancing the male and female halves?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of that urge, the urge to find the other significant person, yeah? And this goes, it's not necessarily heterosexual, but it's an urge, and most people do interpret it as the male and female joining together. And you will find that even in other types of relationships, like homosexual relationships or lesbian relationships, you will have the male and female. One of them will very, very powerfully be the male, and one of them will very, very powerfully be the female. Yeah. So it can be, you can really say it's all about gender. And the gender is actually very physical. It's a physical, you can have a physical body gender that is different to your sexual organs that you were born with. You can have a gender that your soul or individuality, the person that is inside the body, has. And it might be different to the bodies, yeah, or it might be different to their sexual organs. And then there's people who are born who don't have a gender, yeah, but they have, their physical bodies will have. And then the gender is independent, again, to sexual orientation. So when you have that urge, that huge pull to find your soulmate, it's actually the urge to be enlightened, to become one, going to oneness, yeah, become oneness. And the societal structure, the only one, the first chance that they give us really, is joining as one with one more person, just one person.
That seems like a terribly limited option.
Yes. You can practice there, though, you know? And does have its learning. It does have its satisfaction. It's beautiful. But it's not the underlying energy. It's actually for becoming one with the entire universe.
So in a sense, we are really one with all. And so when we look into the eyes of anyone, we can be in love with all people as long as manifesting some kind of psychopathic behavior. I found it interesting that you wrote that you explain in the Course that we fall in vibration when we fall in love as our awareness shrinks. Would you like to go into that to explain what you meant by that?
I'm actually losing you from my connection. There's a lot of crackling. Did you want to try and call me back or call me on the other number?
We'll have to get our technician in here to
all this vibrational.
Somebody doesn't want people to find out about this.
Exactly.
Maybe hurry up and say it while we got a second.
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah. So the
now
question
we're okay.
was sorry.
All right.
Yeah. I
thought it was interesting is because I've experienced this too, that I've been head over heels in love. And I can see now, in retrospect, that my vibration dropped when I fell in love, and my awareness shrinks. And how do you see that?
Oh, that's right, yes. The words fall in love, they're not like a coincidence, right? We fall, it's the fall. it's a regular fall that is in so many mythologies and stories that we're told. It's a fall. And also, love is blind, yeah?
Yes,
that's another.
Yes.
Blindness means you're not aware, no longer
yes.
aware. That, and it's actually, that's why it's a falling vibration, because your awareness shrinks very, very tiny. All you can see, all you can think about is the other person, and everything else goes out the window. Yeah. Often people can't eat, can't sleep, you know, when they're in that state of being in love.
Right, right.
Love.
Well, we are having quite a time of it, aren't we? Are you making popcorn over there?
I have no idea what's happening. Did you want me to send you the new number, the other number?
Okay, so we're back from our popcorn call. We have a new line now, so hopefully we'll have a clear shot at the rest of the show. And we were talking about how we fall in vibration when we fall in love, and also love is blind. So I think that's where we left off.
Yeah, definitely. The vibration of falling in love is basically when you're, we call it the fall, because our awareness shrinks to a tiny little thing. And we can only think about the other person. We obsess over them, really. And it's not really conducive to the expansion of awareness, expansion of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it seems as if our relationships are, if we're wise, they're all lessons, in a sense, on how to expand and grow. In a sense, all relationships really are a search for, or a desire to find, to reconnect with Source.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
So, and then, of course, if we think that Source is outside ourselves, then we're going to have a long search.
That's right.
So, we have to find Source within ourselves, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. We are Source. That's the whole point, yeah?
Right.
We are Source, and so is everybody else Source. And,
yeah.
You know, you can have a very, very amazing, deep relationship with somebody else if that other somebody else also realizes it. And I have seen that the most amazing couples that have the most amazing relationships are when they became complete and whole in themselves first. And then
yeah.
they looked around and said, oh, who can I share this happiness with? Who can I share this completeness with?
Mm-hmm.
They find another complete person, and they're both complete. And that's amazing, amazing what they can do, you know, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How has the patriarchy removed and suppressed the divine feminine or goddess from the level of creation? It seems that she's been pretty much removed from the highest levels, the God levels, the God programs. There are lots
mm-hmm.
of God programs running here. And, you know, it seems as if she's been removed or suppressed almost entirely.
Yeah, there's two little aspects about the gods. One of them is that at the moment, most of the Western world and the main religions around the planet have one god, and he's a male god. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a human creation, because if you look at it right now and think, okay, when you look at that god and you think, does that god have a penis and testicles? And if so, why? Then the whole thing really shakes, yeah?
Right.
Because all of a sudden, he's got sexual organs and then gender and maybe sexual desires. And it all shakes up, and it shows exactly how silly the whole concept of
right.
having a sex in a god. And then you think of goddess, it's the same thing. Think of Gaia or another goddess, the divine feminine. You think, does she have a vagina and a clitoris, you know? And you feel the same thing. You go, ooh, okay. what are we looking at here, you know?
Right.
So that's what we are actually doing. We're giving them sexual organs, yeah?
Yeah.
And why do we do that? That's a human construct.
Yeah.
The divine energies, which are basically interpretations of our higher self, don't have a gender, don't have sex, but we have certain aspects which we allocate to energy which is colored in a certain way. We call it female. Energy which we color a certain way, we call male. The divine masculine, the divine feminine. And the pure divineness of both of them have been suppressed, not just the female, but both of those. The healthy divine father has been suppressed for many decades, for many thousands of years. And all expressions of the female have been suppressed indeed, because otherwise you can't have a patriarchy, yeah? If you put women, if you don't put all these divisions on women, women will unite. They will naturally unite. There's something that women do. They will unite and work together, and they will think globally. They'll think for society, what's best for the children normally, yeah? What's best for their men. And they will work things to make that happen for everybody and for themselves too. What's best for everybody type thing, which is different to, I want this piece of land and I'm going to kill you so you can get out because I'm going to be better off here, yeah? So it's that, those energies, and some women will be very, the women on our society have been taught from a very young age a couple of things, that other women are dangerous, yeah, because for many, many thousands of years, the survival of this woman was completely dependent on a man. Yeah? For many, even until very recently in history, women were the property of men.
That's right.
And in cultures around the world, even modern, so supposedly modern cultures, their religion also says the woman belongs, is the property of the man, you know, and the man has to, you know, discipline her and all this type of thing. And so we have that thing that the women had to have a man, otherwise she's going to die, her children are going to die of starvation. And so there was this huge competition between women to get the best men. And then when a woman had a man, she had to hold on to him. Yeah. So you have all that female competition when it's not even natural for a woman to be with one man forever anyway. Yeah. Because even genetically speaking, it's more genetically desirable for the woman to have children with different men. Because then the mix of genetic material in her own body grows, becomes better, and the best of the batch can be chosen for all the consecutive children. Yeah?
Huh.
So people think, oh, no, that doesn't happen to humans. It only happens to cats and dogs, yeah? But hello, we're all mammals. We actually function in the same way. And
so what you're saying is it's better or ideal, genetically speaking, for a woman to have babies, children by different men, because each genetic contribution from the man, from his sperm, alters her genetics and improves it so that the next baby can pull from that genetic pool within her body. Is that true?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And
we men may have it backwards, that we think that having sex with a lot of women is going to be more beneficial. But that's if a lot of men have a lot of sex with
exactly.
a lot of women who are having
exactly.
a lot of men.
Right, exactly. Otherwise, it backfires, because if
right.
you have the one man who has 300 wives and has children with all of them, the genetic material is extremely limited. Yeah?
It'll stink.
Yeah, it's really bad. And
right.
they will die off, you know, because they're...
Yeah, and if you think that you're from some bloodline that is holy, that needs to be preserved, then you end up having very, very strange problems with the royals and the rest that are interbreeding.
Exactly, yeah. You have a lot of problems there.
Oh, terrible problems.
But when we mix both with a lot of other, genetically speaking, if we mix, and also the races mix and the different lineages mix, that's when the best results come about. And that's why there's so many cultures that prohibit it, yeah?
Mm.
Because then you eventually disable some of the genetic characteristics that are actually part of the human genome. That when you talked about, you know, these royals and stuff, there are two main genetic groups on the planet. One of them is a group that has a genetic structure that makes them follow orders, yeah? And the other is one that has a genetic structure that leads, yeah, gives orders, and also is the other ones respond to those people by listening, yeah, and doing what that person tells them. And if you start mixing it all up, those two little thingies get messed up, yeah? Messed up. So you have individuals who are free to do whatever they like, you know, and they don't want to give orders, they don't have to give orders, no, you know, and they don't have to receive orders and do what they're told. So, yeah, that's one of the things, and also these all the programs and the genetic manipulation to stop us from being psychic, from being able to be fully telepathic, because that's our natural state as human beings. And all sorts of different programs get broken down when you start mixing the races and really having a fabulous time of it.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, all these diseases have been injected so it puts people off so that you don't have lots of partners and stuff like that as well. Mm. At the same time, because of all the programs, if you do want to do any type of spiritual work with somebody using a sexual tool like the Kama Sutra or something like that, which, again, the Kama Sutra is very patriarchal, but I'm just giving it as an example, you're better off just having one partner, yeah, because when we have our lower chakras, the first and second chakras are extremely powerful. They're full of chi, yeah, amazing amount of chi power. That's where they say the kundalini is coiled up and everything else. So very, very powerful centers, extremely powerful, and they get sticky. They have all this stuff that attached to them, all the belief systems and oppressions, and all that stuff. And also, when you have sexual relationships with other individuals, you get their stuff and get stuck on there too. You get you kind of join energetically with all these people and all their stuff. So you can go through a period of processing and cleaning up your lower chakras, and then if you have a partner who's done the same thing, you can do some amazing, amazing spiritual work, you know, with just the one partner. So, again, with the sexual belief systems and sexual for just having babies or sexual for spiritual advancement, the programs that we've been taught are totally off. Basically, they're tools, and we use them as we see fit. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this obsession is really created through that tension of suppression and stimulation.
Mm-hmm. It's almost as if we're being almost forced down a path of this tension between light and dark, or between different desires, and that's creating a kind of schism that is not created, not self-created. It's something that's coming from the programs that are running all over this place.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, another thing that you mentioned, too, is about the subject matter, that there's a difference between our programming and our consciously creating 5D. In other words, we can't take our programming into a conscious creation. Do you want to go a little bit into that?
Yeah, because if you are running through programs, those are running in the background, and you have no control over them. And the fifth dimension, like I've always mentioned, is not a location in time-space. It's your own creation. How do you create it? You become empowered. You are the one who consciously creates. And here's the glitch. You are always creating. You are always creating. You have never stopped creating. Yeah. So it's not something that's a new power that now we can create. No, no, no. You are always continuously creating. Yeah. But now the difference is we do it consciously.
Right.
That's it. We do it consciously. So we look into those programs. Yeah. And we decide, okay, oh, I can see that program now. I'm going to dissolve that program. Oh, my God, this other program, I really like that program. I'm going to keep that one. Yeah. So it's different programs that we're running, and we decide which ones we release, we decide which ones we keep, and we can actually create new ones and have those running in the background. But they're our own programs that if we want, yeah. We do
right.
it consciously. We do it consciously.
Right. And that also requires having a sovereign free will, which is freed up from contracts and agreements that we subconsciously have made in the past.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And that's very easy to do. All you do is you process your fears, and every time you find a contract or something that you feel, how do you find that you feel that you have to do something? Because, you know, you said so. Change your mind, yeah?
That's exactly.
That's
right.
The beauty of free will. You don't have to do something you promised to do. And people
right.
get really annoyed with you. They will go nuts. And that's fine. That's perfectly good. It's fine. But don't feel obligated to do something just because you said you would.
Right, exactly. yes, I learned about that in my EST classes during the 70s. And the point that Werner made was that it's important to keep your word, because that makes your word powerful, and that also raises your integrity. So when you change your word, the way to do that is to go back to the people that you made the agreement with and say that I'm no longer, I am no longer going to keep this agreement for whatever reason, and you just be honest about it.
Exactly, yeah. That deprograms the whole structure.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there's a whole... I have mixed feelings about this whole subject, and I heard Teal Scott talk about this the other day with Andrew Bartzis, and the subject matter is twin flames and soulmates. And Teal tended to feel that she sees things as energetics, and so there aren't, in a sense, there is no such thing. But I guess for our purposes, in the 3D world, how do we view the idea of a twin flame or soulmate?
Well, I'll tell you something. I get also a lot of calls messages and things of people saying, you're my soulmate. Yeah.
Oh, my.
And yeah, loads and loads of people say, you know, I found you, I've been looking, I know it's you, you're my soulmate. And you know what? They're absolutely right. Because
right,
I'm
right.
everybody's soulmate. I'm the soulmate of every single person on the planet. And so are you, and so is everybody listening to this call. Everyone is everybody else's soulmate, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And twin flame and everything else. But it's that uniqueness of the one that's the illusion. Yeah,
yes, yes.
So in my course, I talk about this, and I say, look, you know, if all you get out of the course is to stop looking for their one and start looking for a one, you've done it. I mean, that's an amazing, you know, amazing change in structure and program. When you start finding a special one rather than the special one.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people out there who are energetically a perfect match for you, who you might interpret as your soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole, indeed, I do believe that the whole structure of the soulmates, you know, and all these twin flames and things is very modern, very new, and it's something that's used to distract individuals, really
mm-hmm.
distract them.
But
placing that relationship has been so important, and for women, even to their own survival, yeah, their own
yes.
survival, is just crazy.
Well, yes, especially since the truth of the matter is we are complete and whole within ourselves and perfect as we are right now in this moment. We need nothing else to complete ourselves. We are complete.
Yeah.
So until you can come from that place of completeness, you can't enjoy and share the energies of other people without feeling that you need to have them.
Exactly,
And that creates a lot of suffering, unnecessary suffering, and it creates a lot of waste of time because we may have some soul work to do here in relation to freeing the planet or raising the level of the vibration or something else. And when we're running around looking for soulmates and twin flames, we're kind of caught in la-la land.
Yep.
Which basically,
and you'd be surprised how many people are stuck there. It's just amazing.
And basically, that can be a justification just to have a lot of sex.
It could be a justification for that, you know, and also to do all sorts of weird things. All sorts of weird things.
All sorts of weird things.
Yeah, like, you know, abuse of power and it's basically
hostage,
a distraction.
Well, look at all the people that have been discovered recently in the you know, over the last months, who have trapped women down in basements and kept them there for 10 or 15 years. Nobody knew. They were normal people, and all of a sudden, you know, and they had babies by them, and they were having sex with the children, and I mean, it's really quite a perverse kind of way of letting something out that is trapped or suppressed within that person.
Yeah, it's all messed up because the programs are messed up, yeah?
The
extremes that we manifest as a society, that's the extreme.
Well, right, and the level of pedophilia, of course, is not even, it's off the charts, and people don't hear about it, so they don't know about it. They don't know that the power structure uses pedophilia in global sex rings to make lots of money and also to blackmail leaders around the world so that they can continue with an agenda that is contrary to the human agenda.
Yeah, and it's also, mystically speaking, a bind. It binds the person into an energetic structure where they're now receiving orders and they have to follow them through.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You used a term called dropping the dream towards the end of the course, and I was wondering if you would explain what you mean by dropping the dream.
Yeah, this is one of the hardest things when we talk about this topic, because on the one hand, we really, 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 all of us want to have a really beautiful relationship, a one-on-one relationship for our entire lives, yeah? We want to be hugged, we want to be kissed, we want to be admired, be special, be loved, be made love to, and have the same for the other person, you know, to hug them and kiss them and make love to them and have a really special person. And that's part of the programs that we have, and also the needs that we have due to the structure of society that has placed that relationship as the most important and often the only one where a person can be touched and loved. Yeah. So in many times, a person who is not in a sexual relationship won't even have a hug for weeks. You know, nobody will hug them in this society. In other societies, they do because they say hello and they hug each other. You know. But in this one, it's really harsh. So it becomes a very, very important one. And the dream of finding the one, finding the one rather than anyone, is extremely difficult to drop because the person says, okay, so for me to really, really find the person that I want to spend the rest of my life with, I have to become complete. In order to become complete, I have to work on myself and stop looking and stop obsessing and stop thinking that I'm going to find the one as a need.
Right.
Yeah, because when you need it, that's what you're going to create. You're going to create need. But if I don't drop it, I'm not going to get it. So it's like that's dropping the dream. Because often the dream of what you think you need or you want or you're going to have in the future is so much greater than the actually getting it, that you stay in the dream forever. Yeah. It's like the fantasy, yeah? The fantasy of having it or the need to have it is much more powerful than actually manifesting it in real life. And until you drop the dream and the dream becomes secondary, and so that reality can become the primary focus, then that's the difficulty there. That's where the difficulty comes in. It's like a catch-22 type thing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What would you say is the difference between the human love we feel for another person and universal love?
The human love is like a tiny little shadow compared to the universal divine love. Our true essence, which is that powerful energy, it's like, you know, the human love would be a tiny little grain of sand, and our true essence, the universal love, is the entire beach. Yeah. So it's like a tiny little shadow of the real thing. Plus, in human love, we have a lot of stuff attached to it, like desire. We have possession, uniqueness, and all sorts of things attached to human love. And for universal love, doesn't have any attachment. It's completely unconditional, and it's just pure energy. It's a force. It's power. It's an energy. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And when we tap into it, we call it the same name, because when we tap into that source energy, the source of what we are, the closest we can get to in human language is light, love, and joy. Yeah? And I would even add satisfaction, complete satisfaction, complete wholeness, you know? So that would be the difference, is really, it's like night and day, really.
I was thinking about the nature experience and how we tend to think that nature is asexual or not sexual, but doesn't everything in nature experience some kind of level of ecstatic union in order to replicate?
Not everything, because there's a lot of species that don't that have cell division.
Right.
And there are lots of plants that grow through vines. The vines bury themselves and they grow up again, some new plants of that same species. So there's the sexual union as such doesn't always have that, the orgasm, yeah?
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't have the orgasm. Many species are also, we release their eggs and sperm through the tides or through the moonlight, through temperature, and it's like it just is not, doesn't have any, an orgasm behind it type thing. But a lot of the animal species and different fish and insects and other creatures do tend to, what we've seen, no? It's like we start watching them on the Discovery Channel.
Yeah, I like that, yeah.
They're always at it, you know. And that energy, when properly harnessed, when properly learned as a human being, you can really use it for a lot of stuff. That's pure chi, pure energy. And there's people who will use it for manifesting stuff. There's magic practitioners, magic with a K, practitioners, who will purposely use that energy of that moment to put programs into their environment, to make manifestations, to change their lives, to change their programs. You know, it's like, okay, so now I'm really bad at math, so I'm going back, during orgasm, I'm going to be brilliant at math. And they put that forth, yeah?
Oh.
And they literally change their program. So, yeah, it's a tool, and it's extremely powerful energy that's released there. So, and one of the things that I've always wondered, you know, is like, okay, so where are sexual organs placed in that chakra location, because, or that part of the body, because of the chi, or was the chi placed there because of the sexual organs? Yeah.
Oh.
An interesting concept to look at, yeah.
Yeah. So there are different ways to channel that energy and use it as a force for change in areas of your life that you'd like to enhance or expand.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And seeing if we're talking about orgasms, I can tell you that for many years in my own experience I didn't know why this was happening, obviously, you know, it's like I'd learned later on why, but I would see the planet. Our planet just burst with light, and it was a planet of light.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like during the orgasm, I was doing magical visualization of the planet rising in vibration, becoming a planet of light.
Mm-hmm. And there's a kundalini in the earth too, isn't there?
I believe so. Yeah, I'm not really familiar with it, but I have been told or have read about it.
So. Another thing I heard recently is that the sun is getting ready to divide into four poles, which is an interesting thought because it reminds one of a cell dividing, and that reminds one of shifting into, you know, it's getting ready to split into two suns. So there's a possibility that we will have two suns somehow.
Wow, I hadn't heard that. That's news to me.
Yeah,
that's
the Japanese
amazing.
Made that discovery, and if that's true, then it's possible that there could be a higher vibrational sun that will take a higher vibrational Earth with it, and a lower vibrational sun that will work with something that's still at a different level.
That makes sense, because I did perceive the splitting of the realities, the splitting of the planets in 2011.
Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, because you've mentioned sometime recently about the idea that the collective doesn't seem to be, that it seems like there's a vast division between those who are running the show and don't want to give up, and those who don't want to change, and then those who are, you know, working for the light tirelessly and are ready for a new world.
Yeah, the division, as I perceived it energetically speaking, happened in the summer of 2011. Okay. Well, basically, it's becoming more tangible now. It's more palatable. You can actually just go into a meditative state really quickly, and you can really sense any vibration that is joy, light, love all around you. And the paradigm of darkness, I think for those who chose it, is becoming more solid. So, but for us, it's becoming more transparent, yeah? More see-through, more less tangible, more of an illusion. You can really tell it's an illusion now. Yeah.
Well, it looks like we're just about out of time, and I don't want to run over. So that seemed like it went by in about 3 seconds.
I know.
So if you would mention your website, and I want to thank you for coming back. I always love talking to you, Aniyu, and it didn't seem like we got to talk about a lot of things, but we did. And just mention where people can find you and your courses and tools and everything else.
Sure. You can find me at ascension101.com. And there's a huge library of articles there, and also there's tools, and there's an e-store. If you want to support the work that we do at Ascension 101, you can buy stuff there, or you can press the donate button. So it's all there for you to explore and look at and grow and be empowered. That's our motto, inspire to empower, and empower to be inspired.
Wonderful. Well, you certainly do embody that.
Thank you.
All right, and thanks for coming on tonight, and thanks for being my friend. I certainly enjoy your...
Oh, and I love you so much.
I love you, too. All right, well, good night, Anelia, and good night, everybody.